Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer here with Ozzy Wynn, the greatest magician and mentalist in the world. Been seen everywhere, and now we've seen here at SoFi Stadium after selling out the Sydney Theater. Welcome to the Playbook.
Thank you for having me.
So see, it's kind of like the WWE. So Hulk Hogan was a friend of mine, and I asked him, I said, Hulk Hogan, I said, is world wrestling real? And he said, David, it is real. The outcome is determined beforehand, but world wrestling is real. I've had 18 surgeries. I've done all, wrestling is real, but the outcome is already predetermined. I kind of analogize what he said to magic.
It is. It's
because
true.
Because magic is real. It's just the outcome is predetermined. And I was curious if you could maybe analogize Hulk Hogan's wise statements about wrestling into magic, of similarities or difference about magic being real but predetermined.
It's exactly the problem that magicians have. When you go to a sports event and you have a team that you're rooting for them, you want them to win, there's real suspense. Am I going to go home happy, sad, upset? And that is what every dramatic structure, the theater, the movies actually want to do. They want to create the illusion of the first, and I add, the only time. This has never happened before. This will never happen again. And basically, the theater is a confinement. It's already a very contrived environment. So, yes, we know how it's going to end. We know the magician is going to find a card. We know that if something's going to float, okay, it's going to happen. And we really try to create the illusion of what happens, let's say, in sports, where we don't know how it's going to unfold, what's going to be the outcome. Only then real suspense can happen. So a good movie creates the illusion that anything could happen, right? Everything is on the table, and it convinces you to let go of what you know, that you know. The director already cut, it's already cut. We know it's going to end. And it's a really tough job to create that illusion of uncertainty and the idea that anything could happen. And that's what magicians do. And it's a very fair analogy that sometimes we call it the magician in trouble. We create the illusion that, uh-oh, something went off. They don't know that we practiced this mistake. They don't know that we're faking the shit out of it. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I wrote a book called Don't Do Business with Dicks. You can say shit.
Okay, now I feel at home. Okay. But it's really that, right?
He was plugging in, by the way.
Yeah.
Good. So it's interesting because you looked at football behind us, and, you know, one of the reasons that sports has such value today, it was the first reality TV.
Oh, of
and
course.
It will be the last as well. It'll be the last.
Unless we fake it.
Yeah. Well, you never know with gambling. And you know, in the aspect of being a magician, it is an art. You know, it's like golf. You can't just go out the first time and be a magician. There's a lot that goes into it. So what are some of the things at the beginning that go into being a magician? And then what are some of the things as you became a magician that you didn't realize that you could do as a magician?
Sure. There's a lot of obstacles. When I was 13 years old, and I remember I went to a magic shop.
And that's the first time you were interested in magic?
It was always like around, you know, my uncle did some tricks for me and this and that, but
like quarters out of here.
Yeah, those kind of things. Or he put a cigarette on the table and it start moving, and later I realized he's just blowing, and it moved. It was amazing at the time. It's like, wow, this guy
Great
can
suspense.
Yes, this guy can move object with the power of his mind. Turns out he just blew at it. But here's the thing: I walked into a magic shop. This is a real feeling I have that I still remember. The guy did this. He rolls his sleeves up, and he shows his hands empty, and then he removes a red handkerchief. He makes a fist and starts pushing the hanky into his hand like that. And everything is so deliberate and slow. This hanky is not going anywhere. Shows his hands empty. This, and it's gone. Absolutely gone. And I'm standing there and I'm like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen another human being do. I said, this should not exist. So you have this feeling, right? I've seen a miracle. And then I said, okay, how does it work? He goes, I can't tell you. It's a secret. But I can sell it to you. Then you can buy this shit. So
he broke my rule about my book. He told me you can't sell a secret. I guess you can.
You can. Everything is for sale. So, but here's the thing. I buy the trick. I learn how it works. And then I have this feeling. I go, no, that's not the secret. No, that can't be the secret. The secret was so dumb and so simple that I refused to believe that was the... It's almost as if I wanted this trick to be real magic. Mm. And I wanted to buy magic. Instead, I bought a trick. And that's the first hurdle you have. And it's very interesting. How knowledge affects experience. If you know a lot about something, you lose this naivete of looking at something with this,
willing suspension of disbelief.
Right? Yeah. So I believe, like chefs, people that deal with food day in, day out, and they know exactly how to make it, how it's fried and it's steamed and whatever it is, and they go to a restaurant, I believe that they eat differently than I do. Their judgment is very different. Filmmakers, you know, they might have a harder time to go to that place where, oh my God, I'm in this world. Maybe it happens to them, but it's harder. So the more you know about something, it's not better or worse, but it will change the experience. And now it's very true to magic. It's very hard for me to see magic and go, wow, how did you do this? I go, oh. It's like, oh, that's a nice take on blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's like Penn and Teller.
Yeah, exactly.
They have a whole TV show about it.
And by the way, people think that they don't want to be fooled. They're friends of mine. They want to be fooled.
Somebody.
If somebody fools them, they go, oh, how did you do this? But it's a good anger.
Yeah.
It's like,
I can see that.
And then you people don't know this, but after they say, you fooled us, here's the trophy, wow, you won, go home. They chase that person and say, okay.
How did you do it?
I'm
surprised they don't have in, because you know, when you do, I'm in an entrepreneur TV shows.
Yes.
Right, and there's all these things on the back end in the agreement. To own the company, to fund the company,
yes.
Deal, you know, that the audience never gets to see. I'm surprised they don't make part of the TV show. If you fool us, you get all the money, you get the trophy, but you got to tell us the secret.
Yes, it will be an amazing, actually, like a segment of reality TV of like to see what's behind the scenes.
Yeah,
because it's actually quite kind of cool operation. Here's what they do: the producers really make sure that they don't know who's coming on the show.
Penn and Teller.
Yeah. So they're really like...
So they can't do any due diligence on that.
No. So as soon as the person walks in, they have an earpiece because the consultant, Michael Close, he's looking, he knows the acts before. He knows how it works. So when they make their guess, the person who actually tells them, hey, you got it or you didn't, is somebody in their ear telling them, you're off. You know, they go, okay, you fooled us. But the point of it is, it is as real as it gets. And I believe, I can't say it with certainty because I'm not them, that when they do get fooled, it's a glorious, it takes me back to the kid I was before I learned the magic and knew how it works. And it's a beautiful thing to not know. You know, we live in an era where we want to know everything. Oh, Google, what is it? Let me Google this. You know, immediately we have the answer.
Yeah.
But there's something actually beautiful about that experience of the first time. Trying food that you've never tried for the first time, seeing a genre film for the first time, or sport, whatever it is, seeing something with that fresh eyes, with that virginity, whatever it is that makes you feel, oh, this is beautiful. And you'll never have that experience again. And we need to cherish that student approach or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's why travel is so valuable.
Yeah.
Because you get to see things. If anybody's ever gone on safari or to the Galapagos Islands and, you know, to these amazing places, that is the true value of it. Like, wow. You know, being back to a 13-year-old, trying to figure it out, like, how does a turtle live to 140 years old and get to see one? Or, you know, I've been this far from a whale, 40-foot whale in the water, and like, that's the closest I've been to pure adrenaline as a kid. Like, the first time at Disneyland kind of feeling. Another thing I think people are curious about when it comes to being a magician versus a mentalist, because there is a distinct difference in the practices, yes, or the skill. What is the difference between a magician and a mentalist?
For me, it depends on what the client wants. If he wants a magician, I'm a magician. If he wants a mentalist, I'm a mentalist.
I knew there was a difference.
For me, it's a demand.
Perceived value, bottom line.
So the deal is this. Here's the deal. I wrote an essay years ago that I never published, but I wrote that all...
Put in ChatGPT, publish.
Exactly. That's what I should do. All magic, every trick is mentalism. And here's the difference. So if I go to Las Vegas and I see this illusionist makes a lady float with the smoke and he passes the hoop, we know culturally, oh, that's illusion. The name even, it's a grand illusion. The name of the genre reveals the secret. Oh, it's an illusion, grand illusion. But what if you go to Tibet and there's a monk there, you know, sitting on a pillow and he's meditating, and with the power of his mind, he can float like 5 inches off the ground. And he's doing it with the power of his mind. If you're buying it, if you believe it, it's mentalism. Uri Geller, the most famous psychic in the world, made people believe that he can bend a spoon, right?
With his mind.
It's a trick. It doesn't get more magic-y than that. If I have a spoon right now, somebody hand me a real spoon, and I do this, and it starts to bend, if you believe it's done with the power of the mind, it's mentalism. It's I achieved it with the power of the mind. So the only difference is how do you perceive the magic? You know, and with, you know, with card magic and whatnot, you immediately know, oh, trickery, sleight of hand. So yeah, it really is a perception thing. And usually mind reading is more about revealing people's thoughts and or influencing their thoughts.
Right. Persuasion's a big part of mentalism.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I've done work with Marshall Silver, and even to the point where we went out to dinner and there's a long line, no tables available. And he said, I'll bet you $100 I can get you a table. And he went in and he said, I'll use the power of this mental persuasion, sure, suggestion, he called it,
I think.
Whatever he did. And it was complete bullshit because I knew what he was doing. He was taking my $100 and he was tipping the lady.
But that's the power of persuasion.
Exactly. He persuaded me to tip $100. This is worth it.
You got the table?
Exactly. Okay, yeah. For $100, we better add.
So that's
mine.
You see, that's mentalism.
That's mentalism.
Yeah, $100.
Right. Now, there's different levels. Do you have to be more prepared and exact if you were going to do illusions, tricks, and mentalism in a small room like this compared to at the Sydney Theater with 22,000 people?
It's two different things. There's something we call jazzy magic, meaning I really don't, if I did magic today for you, I don't
You're
know.
Going what, to.
I'm going to. Okay, if you make
That's
me.
Part
I'm,
of
okay.
Deal. Make
but
me.
I don't have a plan. I really don't. I look at the room and I go, oh, I think I should try to do this. But in the Sydney Opera House, obviously it's more scripted than this, and we have sets, although there's lots of ad-libs and whatnot, because I love it. I enjoy the idea of this flexibility to go to places. So a lot of, like, we had some crazy... I tell you a few things that happened in the show, okay? And I love when there's a plan and we make a little detour. You know, that's for me where magic happens to me. So I'm doing this show where there's... everybody writes their name on a piece of paper, I mix it up, and the grand finale is I'm going to take a random name and the last trick happens with that name. So somebody chose a random name, it was Barbara. And I say, where's Barbara? Nobody raises their hand. Nobody. And I go, obviously that's somebody wrote this. Where's Barbara? And I'm starting to think, maybe Barbara went to the bathroom. Maybe, there's no Barbara. I said, did anybody leave? No, nobody left. After like, every minute in showbiz is like, it feels like an hour. So eventually an old man stands up and he says, Asi, I'm so sorry if I ruined your grand finale, but I wrote that. And I go, oh, okay. Can you explain? He says, my wife loved magic. And when you asked us to write names, I said, why don't I write her name to honor her? The room went like I said, you know what? I'm so happy you did that. We're going to dedicate the last piece of magic to your wife, Barbara. And it was so emotional and so great. You cannot, talking about that first, the illusion of the first and only time, these are the kind of things that if they happen, remind me why I'm in showbiz. Mm-hmm. The idea that anything could happen. So that was, there was another time where there was a lady sitting across from me, and I said, hey, take a card. And her husband goes, oh, I need to tell you she's blind. And immediately I said, so what? So what? And I did the whole trick for her, narrating everything that's happening, like explaining everything that's happening on stage. And it was a beautiful, small but beautiful moment. And she came to the show 7 more times to experience it. And it was, to me, that's why I'm doing it. You know, it's those moments where something that I'd never expected or could orchestrate happens. And that, to me, that's amazing. I love it.
It's so magic, the reflective nature of what you do, where you yourself, Penn and Teller themselves, are still trying to experience the exact experience that they're trying to share. And you're in that experience most attracted to or most fulfilling with the unexpected. And I think that's an area when we look at technology or AI, where if you see technology like I do since 1991, 1992, when I graduated law school and got really heavily involved in it, it's here to make humans more human. And this idea of uncertainty, although it creates the most fear, right? Remember, in a frequency that can be measured today by technology, fear and excitement have the exact same frequency. I believe the difference between fear and excitement is that you can be excited if you're prepared. You're afraid if you're not. And so within the context of that, give your own perspective to when you're afraid, to what you're prepared for, and when you're excited, what you have prepared for. It also, within that distinguished perspective, is the difference between knowledge and wisdom. Two completely different things, because it's experience. One of the things I love about wisdom and being a coach and mentor, and you, I can see you love it as a magician, is when we take someone from A to B, as a mentor, a coach, a teacher, a magician, or a mentalist, that's what you're doing. You're taking people on a journey from A to B. I can save you the dummy tax. He could give you the secrets. I could give you the directions. I can teach you the directions. I could bring the best out of you to get through those directions faster, more efficiently, effectively. So could he. But to get you from A to B, what makes it so great and why I love magic and mentalism, to take you from A to B, it's still a private lesson between you and God. It's your own private lesson. And so when he's on stage, it's his own private lesson. When you're in the audience, it's your private lesson. When I'm interviewing him, it's my private lesson. It's why I purposely love Q&A, because it's like being a magician and you just don't know what's gonna be asked, right? And I'm prepared, so I'm excited. Never once have I gotten in front of a big audience to do Q&A or meetups or masterminds and say, ask me anything. People are terrified to speak, but imagine, ask me anything. A lot of people be terrified. I'm just excited.
Me too. That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
Because again, the best things happen when you're caught off guard, when somebody just makes you think in the moment. It's as real as it gets. Because maybe I'm saying right now things I've said a million times. If somebody will make me say something I've never said before, that's amazing to me. That's exciting.
So to finish up, tell me a trick that you've seen. They're done with the secret.
Sure.
Tell me a trick you've seen that you didn't know the secret, that impressed you. You still maybe are perplexed on how the hell did that guy do it?
So, you know, there's a trick I've never seen, but it's a trick that everybody talks about. And it was a doctor who lived in Brooklyn, and he designed an entire room in his house to perform one trick. And every major magician, like Houdini, would go there, he would do a performance for them, and at the end he says, did I fool you? And they said, yes. And he would take a book and say, sign here, you were here, and you were fooled. and literally, every person who's been to his house was fooled by it. And it was variations of the same trick, but one of the ones that really was unbelievable, he will take, you say you have a deck of cards, bring your own deck of cards, and he place it in like an isolated kind of like holder, and it's the deck you provide it, and he will open the flap, and he will say, can you name any card? And you say, six of hearts. And all of a sudden, the six of hearts would start floating out of the pack.
Oh, shit.
Like that, like halfway out, and then he will take the pack and give it to you. And there are many rumors and speculations of how this works, but nobody really knows, except for four people in the world that know how it works.
Wow.
So I'm still working on
being one of the
being my
yeah.
Amazing.
Wow.
On it, I'm working on it.
I think there's a lot we can analogize to how to make your own life magic and how to be your own mentalist and to experience things as a 13-year-old. We all, no matter what our age are, should put ourselves in a situation to see things that way. And sometimes it's simple gratitude that allows us to find that light, that love, and that lesson to experience something for the very first time. And if you're not putting yourself in that position, then find a different position, because you should put yourself in that position. That's what great leaders like our friend Asai has joined us. So we're gonna go ahead. Thank you very much for joining me on the playbook.